After a few weeks' break due to work and travel, I'm releasing this follow-up conversation with Julia Black, a former TV producer turned education innovator, where we discuss her groundbreaking Lights On framework and recently published book Lights On Learning, A Parent's Blueprint for Happy, Fulfilled, Curious Kids, something I'm sure a lot of you will be interested in. If you missed Julia's previous guest appearance, her Lights On framework reimagines education by focusing on internal learning processes and parental involvement. The approach treats disengagement not as a problem, but as an opportunity for growth. The framework's effectiveness is based on identifying a learner's unique engagement catalyst that can actually unlock their true potential. In this episode, Julia shares examples of such transformation and how her six different learning signatures help parents and teachers work with various learning states to create a fundamental shift in how we approach education, making it more accessible to all parents. We also discuss AI. As AI becomes more prevalent, Julia sees her Lights On approach as crucial for developing human creativity and problem-solving skills, something I definitely agree with. With an upcoming audiobook and new collaborative projects, she's building a community that prioritizes nurturing curious, fulfilled learners over traditional success metrics. Now, over to Julia.
How are you? It's been a long time.
It has been a long time. Yes. Yeah, I'm good.
And and you've been really busy, haven't you?
I have been busy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You've published your book.
It feels really good to have everything really simple, like my body of work, just kind of really accessible, hopefully, in one place. So, I'm very excited about it.
So, tell all. So for the last time we spoke, people might not have heard your episode, you had a transition career from sort of TV production into really leading the charge into creating a new way to create fulfilled, curious, empowered children and parents. And you were really sort of trying to, I suppose, craft a new path in education, changing and arguably disrupt the old way that we think about teaching children, empowering them, bringing out their natural sort of creativity and curiosity, and questioning the old norms of the education system. So perhaps you just give a little bit of an abridged journey from where we were back then, which was now about three and a half years ago when we spoke, to where you are now and the publishing of the book and your hopes of where the impact that's going to have, particularly on the education sector in the UK.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of there's the old school paradigm, which is very outside in focused and kind of really, measures the outcomes, measures the behavior and focuses in on what we can necessarily see. And my approach called Lights On is all about really going to the internal learning landscape and learning from the inside out and kind of going back to, you know, how we act and behave and show up in the world is, you know, we can go back downstream of that to what we're thinking and what we're feeling at any particular time. And back in 2016, I kind of really got the metric lights on, lights off, because it became very obvious that you can see it in a child's eyes when they're excited, when they're motivated to learn. And and it made it very clear for us that the outcomes or what a child is capable of achieving will very much depend on whether they are in a lights on state or a lights off state. And that really just refers to our mental and emotional and physical connection to learning. So I think where I've ended up from since we talked last time is really kind of really feeling very strongly that parents and educators can bring about changes, and we don't necessarily, I think we can lead the systemic change that I think we all need to see and want to see. And hopefully what my book does is really give parents that blueprint and that accessibility to what is now really 20 years of my own work in human potential, in neuroscience, in education, pedagogy, and all of that, but really making it very simple. So it's almost like you don't have to be a professional now to get your children engaging. And in fact, I often think it's far better if you're not, because then you haven't got any old school thinking to unpick. And I do believe parents the role of parents is going to be increasingly important as more and more children switch off and disengaged and act with their feet, very vocally in some cases, by refusing to go and just saying, no, enough, I'm not doing this anymore. So and I think, yeah, we've got a global community where parents are coming in and learning how to use the tools. Yeah, and I think I'm really excited about the potential to change the conversation at a policy level and things like that, because I just think we're stuck. I think it's an old school narrative and we really don't need to be.
So for people that aren't aware of the framework that you're proposing, I mean, how would they go about sort of starting to, well, they obviously read the book, join your community, but could you just give us an outline of the what that new paradigm is? In terms of how a parent would actually sort of embrace it and the impact it would have in terms of the way that the child learns.
Yeah, so it's really about increasing your self-awareness, and that's where it starts. And it's also as a parent realizing that you are the biggest role model, and also to think as a leader of your family. So often we get caught into parenting strategies that like are, you know, solutions to manage your child's behavior or to get them in school or to do their homework. And so those kind of strategies. And I just think those are like putting a Band-Aid on something. Actually, it's about looking at who we're being and the kind of thinking that we're having as parents or educators or even politicians. And when we really get down to it, or when I lead parents to the sort of the worst case scenario, it ultimately comes down to that they think they're doing a bad job. They feel guilty, a sense of failure, which is the thinking that would lead them to be leading from a lights off place. So it's having that awareness really of what are we making our children's or our students' disengagement mean? And I think the exciting place that I've arrived is that actually I do not see disengagement as a problem at all. I see it as an opportunity for growth. And it's the biggest signal that we could have that that something needs to shift. And rather than that be like the curriculum needs to shift or we need more funding or this needs to change or that needs to change, where I've got to is really, you know, the shift is in the thinking. The shift is in looking at, well, what am I thinking about my own ability? So when I work with children, for example, or parents, it often comes down to like, I'm rubbish. I can't do it. I can't read. My brain doesn't work. And that thinking is obviously going to cause anxiety, really, especially if you're a child going into school every day not being able to read or write or do the maths, because then the whole narrative comes, well, we're falling behind, they're falling behind, like what's wrong with them? And so then we start down this route of investigation of like, yeah, what's wrong with them, why can't they sit still? And so it's very easy for all of us, really, parents, educators, policymakers, leaders, to get down a rabbit hole that has us investigating a whole load of problems that I just do not believe exist. And when we shift to thinking about them as an opportunity, it's just like, okay, well, clearly with that thinking that you're rubbish and your brain doesn't work and that you will never be able to write, you are going to feel anxious and not want to go into the lesson. And you will either retreat internally, depending on, you know, or you will kick out. And when we look at that as perfectly normal behavior for the thinking that they're having, it changes and it moves us from a place of judgment into compassion. So I think that for me is the big shift I see when I'm talking with teachers or head teachers or parents. It's like, if we look at it as disengagement and see it as a behavioral problem, we're in judgment, we chastise and punish, and we have solutions and strategies that, quite frankly, are inhumane and should not still be being practiced with everything we know about human technology and, you know, the heart and the brain and things. But when we shift into seeing it as, okay, we're momentarily they're in lights off thinking, they're having lights off emotions, not as a negative, but when we look at it like that, we know that a child who is thinking that their brain doesn't work, that they're rubbish and they can't do it, they're sad, they're lonely, they're scared, they're in fear. And I guess that moves us into compassion, and it's very powerful when I do the work with teachers, because suddenly their whole lens that they're looking through shifts. And, now it's the focus is all about helping that child feel safe to be able to learn. And so there's such a seismic shift in the strategies that we can use when we look through the lights on, lights off lens. Does that make sense?
Have you got any? Yeah, it does. I'd love to personalize and hear actual transformational stories. Do you have any that you could recount of the impact you've had on either children or their parents or even the teachers?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many. And again, lots of them in my book. But yes, the one I'm going to share, I think, is Bryony. I kind of share her story in the last chapter of my book. And I'm going to share it because it's about the mum making the shift that the instead of the school. And she was 6 years old. So Bryony was 6 years old and she was starting to want to not go to school. So she was starting to have summer aches, you know, finding all those excuses to not want to go in, delay going in and all of this. And then lockdown happened. And her mum came to me thinking, well, this is, you know, a mindset problem, which is, again, where lots of us tend to go. It's a mindset problem, which in some respects it is. And so what I always want to know when I start working with a child, well, what is the reason you don't want to go to school? And we're trying to get to the thinking. And it was that she felt she was rubbish at writing. She felt she couldn't do it. She was beginning to go into sort of daydreaming and then the whole story of falling behind, or she could be doing better. She could be, you know, she's not performing as well as she could. So when we just got down to that, like, I'm rubbish at writing, now we know what the problem is. Yeah. We instead of going down the route of, okay, this is a problem of anxiety and we better go and sort that out. Actually, no, this is a problem of self-belief. And a child, a six-year-old, who believes she's rubbish at the thing she has to do every day when she goes into school. So, of course, she's going to feel anxious. So then where we always start is like, well, what makes you feel like someone? What is the thing that you really love? I call it the heart set. So we always start with activating really the heart set. I think of our learning circuitry as three components: heart set, mindset, and skill set. And I would never want to work on someone's mindset without heart set activated. It's just too heavy. It's heavy lifting and it can be more damaging than it needs to be. So we found out, Nikki, Bryony's mum, found out what, Bryony really loved to do. And it was she loved learning about dinosaurs and space. And she loved absorbing the knowledge and reading the books and then kind of telling it and sharing the knowledge with her younger brother. And so we just let her hang out there for a bit. And then I coached Nikki to really begin to see Bryony as a learner, because this was during lockdown. So she was at home and Nikki was obviously working from home. And just to pick up on the subtle details of when we're seeing a child in their brilliance. And so it was really beautiful because, you know, Bryony started playing with the dinosaurs at one point she had these hula hoops that she put as a Venn diagram and she was sorting the dinosaurs into the different spaces of the overlapping hula hoops. But then when we kind of knew that it was time to start going back to school, we wanted to tackle the anxiety around writing. And so, again, I always just ask very simply, would you like to learn to write or feel better about writing? And inevitably, the answer is always yes. So then it was a question of, at school, I wanted to know, what do they normally do? And it was normally writing for like 10 minutes. So there's the pressure of time as well. And she was finding she was only writing a few words while other people she could see, like her best friends and things, were writing whole pages. And so we just asked her, we gave her a choice, which is always really important, which was, would you like to write 10 words, no time limit, or 10 minutes and see how many words you can write? And so she chose to write 10 words. And it was amazing. Again, Nikki coached her through it. She could see the anxiety kicking in, you know, all the fidgeting and all of that. And she got to 6 words and she wanted to quit. She was like, I can't do it. It's, you know, and Nikki just coached her through and said, can you do one more word? So she's like, I can do one more word. And basically they got to 10. And once they'd got to 10, you get that post-struggle success. You did it. Yeah. And then it was just really, really powerful because she had got evidence now that she could go through that lights off experience and come out the other side. And she's only 6 years old, but her mum was leading her through it, which I think is really powerful. Then we, then it was like, okay, what about making a book of the dinosaurs so that we would have lots of practice to write books and draw the dust dinosaurs and everything. And it's really lovely actually, because it's, I don't know if you'll be able to see it, but I realized when I got the book printed and published that actually Bryony's little dinosaur book, you can't really see it very clearly, is actually now published in my book. So it just feels really
brilliant,
really beautiful. But then, and again, maybe we can share the photos with this, because as soon as Bryony knocked onto that, now she set her own goals. And again, I don't expect you'll be able to see it, but just, you know, like less than 6 months later, she was writing like that.
Yeah.
So wow. From, you know, very, very sort of tip from anxiety about writing to very typical 6-year-old handwriting to like massive, massive progress in a short space of time. All led by her mother, which I think is really exciting, being able to hold space for her to feel lights off, move through lights off, being lights off, and yeah, really, really shift from I can't do this to I can. And ultimately, that sums up to me what Lights on Learning is all about. It's about playing in that realm of, well, anything is possible, you know, and shifting from the impossible to the possible. And that impossible sometimes just meaning it's impossible for me to sit down and write 10 words and then making it possible.
It's incredible to think that a child of 6 years old has anxiety.
Yeah.
Well, you think, you know, a child, everything should be infinite and it's all about opportunity and imagination and feeling that sense, as you say, lights off and just locked down, a sense of like almost lacking self-belief at that age is terrible. And
well,
there
I think
must
this
be
is,
so many
this is
children
what,
like that.
Yeah, and I think I talk about this in the book, saying like the mistake I made was thinking that lights off was a problem for so many years and that we wanted to get the lights on. But actually, it's just a normal part of being human. Like we play in the realm of fear and love all the time, right? We need, if we are to love life and love who we are and really love learning, we need fear close by at all times because that's our survival kind of mechanism. So when we stop seeing being lights off or being anxious, and we maybe stop thinking of it as having anxiety, not having an anxious moment, then that's when we can use it for growth. And that's where it gets really exciting, because now, naturally, even before I knew all of this, I would always work with a learner, whether they're a child, teenager, or adult, beyond, I always try to lead someone beyond their comfort zone so that I can move them to that point of just outside what they're comfortable of achieving. So I think the problem comes when we panic ourselves and we lock in that lights off state rather than see it as a fluid and dynamic momentary shift in thinking and in feeling and needing to sort of regulate back to feeling more aligned, really, or harmonized.
So in terms of getting the book published is an amazing step forward, but where are you at in terms of empowering people to embrace it as a, I suppose, as a framework and methodology? Because I suppose a lot of parents, if they're not aware of the lights on, lights off approach, when they do learn about it, then presumably they're also at a stage going, well, how on earth do I, as a parent, embrace this and apply it if they don't understand how to? What steps do they have to go through to become accomplished and able to guide their child and work with their child to help them in that fluid state?
I've got this all in my book, which is what I feel really proud of, that actually you could just buy the book and have the answers. So one of my most powerful tools is the Lights on Spectrum, because when we started tracking as a group of parents, our lights on and lights off state, it was clear, obviously, the binary is sort of headline data. It just makes it easy for us to kind of gauge, but actually we're more sophisticated than that. And so my lights on spectrum is like 6 different signatures. And I really think of it as an awareness and calibration tool. And I show detail that within the book and kind of guide parents how to use it. The first step, the biggest obstacle, is really about parents feeling courageous enough to know that if they want their children to fulfill on their potential, they have to learn how to do that for themselves. And you tend to get some parents who are just like, bring it on. Oh my goodness, I can use my child's disengagement or the old school paradigm for my own personal professional growth. Yes, please. You have some parents who are then like full of doubt because it's like, well, I never have felt fulfilled, as so many of, you know, adults have not. What if I can't? Or maybe they've lost connection to the thing that they love to do. And then you have another group of parents, which I would kind of put under the category of the old school thinkers, that who just think this is someone else's problem and the teachers need to solve it and they're far too busy, or, you know, and so those parents probably are not my ideal readers. But anyone who feels like, oh my goodness, I would love to feel what it feels like to have that sense of fulfillment, to love myself, to love being me, to know that I am fully using my true capabilities in a new paradigm, which is one where there's ease and flow, not in a must push at all costs and have success. Because we know that, you know that, Mark, that no matter where we get to on an external marker, it does not necessarily mean we're going to be happy. And so for me, I talk about, you know, this is about being happy through choice, not circumstance. And that's a game changer. And when a parent becomes lights on, everything shifts for the children. And I talk about this in my book. I touch on it in my, this is probably going to be this book, but the lights on effect is really that brain to brain synchrony. Like if I'm holding the highest, you know, lights on state in my family, my children can entrain to that. If I meet them down where they are when they are lights off, now that's going to be in sort of the energetic tone. So I think, which I really hope that just simply by buying the book, which is amazing because that means it's very accessible to parents all around the world, regardless of, you know, where they live or, you know, the budgets they have or the income or, you know, socioeconomic backgrounds, all it requires really is a commitment to play an active role in unlocking your children's potential and letting go of the old school narrative that the system is broken.
But what about teachers? What traction are you getting with teachers?
Yeah, I'm beginning to have conversations. I mean, I used to work with schools. I worked with 15 schools when I had my center, and I had a center on a school site. And I love working with teachers. And the same thing applies. There's some, I've talked at a conference with head teachers, and the feedback was, some of them are like, oh my goodness, I love this. And others were like, oh, she's totally naive. This is ridiculous. And again, you know, I'm learning as a change maker. I'm not here to convince anyone. I'm here to invite people who are ready to into a new paradigm. And so the teachers, I'm talking with three heads of groups of schools, so trusts at the moment. And the role, I guess, I feel Lights on Learning can play is that it's not about a seismic shift in what they're already doing. It's about layering on top of that. But it is about bringing in parental engagement. And really, the head teachers or the senior leaders I'm talking to get this is whole school transformation. This is not about getting kids in attendance. This is not about getting kids up three sub-levels, you know, in the grading system. This is about switching on a whole school community to fulfill and on what they're here to do and to be able to live in a way that brings cohesion and harmony to a group of people who are united behind children who are attending a school. And that for me feels very exciting because we do have these leaders. We do have incredible teachers. We do have educators who are courageous, who do not buy into the story that their hands are tied and they can't do it. They find the way to make their vision happen. And I am excited about my part in playing with that, in playing with those kind of people. And I do sit like that, playing creatively with people who are not going to use excuses as to why we can't achieve this. and who are ready to fail massively every single day and talk about micro failing. You know, if we're not taking action, we never have that opportunity to shift things. And I'm also really excited to be being introduced to more people within the special educational needs, you know, and again, the shift in a lens about what solutions are for children with special educational needs, which isn't really a label that I like to use, but it's there, I think also is really, really huge. And just a story, because I know you love stories on that front, is Ollie, who I talk about in my chapter of the first book. What we're talking about is I met him when he was 13. He had had 10,000 hours roughly in school since year two, special educational needs support, diagnosis, what's wrong with him, investigations, you name it. When I met him at 13, so in year nine, he was like, the person I want to be has never made it in school. That to me is a massive, massive failing of a special educational needs intervention for like 7 years or more. And so within minutes, I knew where his heart set was. If we could activate that, I call it their switch. And within 12 hours, completely transformed as a learner. And that year, his best academic report ever. The teachers noticed a difference in the classroom. The head teacher, you know, we talked about it and just said, Ollie found a way to come into school and be Ollie. So that for me is the transformational shifts we're talking about. They can happen really fast. And we're talking 12 hours as opposed to 10,000 hours that was ineffective.
What was his switch?
It was he was a visual storyteller and so I have this tool called the Learning Carousel, which again, you know, is outlined in the book so parents can use it. But I set up various tinkering stations and I observe children and see what do they like to go to. And I had this animation station set up, really simple, a little Lego figure on the ground of an astronaut and a drawing of a globe, the world. And children would just come in and do a little bit of, you know, an iPad set up looking down on it. And children would come in and do animations. And Ollie came in and did it. And immediately I could see like, okay, here's a story with the same bits that other children were using that they had not managed to capture. I also knew that he liked photography, so I asked him to bring in some photos that he had taken, and I could see that he had a particular eye. He was always telling a story, even with how he framed it. Simple. This is not rocket science, which is what's really exciting. Ordinary parents can find their children's switches, flick them on, and then activate their potential in a way that I feel sometimes educators are tripping themselves up. But it was just beautiful. And then he began to just explore that. And now, in his words, he said, finally, I have something I'm proud of.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing and inspiring that you can actually transform someone's perception of themselves in such a short amount of time.
Yeah, really short. Well, that's why it's so powerful. Like on, lights on, off. Lights on, lights off. It is like a flick of a switch. If you know what you're looking for, which for some reason is one of my natural abilities, I kind of feel like somehow I have ability to find someone's really fast. But that's what I want to share in the book, is just like I've developed the tools and techniques so that anyone could do that. And I think the beauty of the community, you don't need the community, but if you wanted to have the support of parents around you who have been through it, is you see ordinary parents who were lights off, absolutely transformed and needing their children, who were also lights off at such a different level. And so I think that for me, I think increasingly the power of community, the power of ordinary people achieving something extraordinary is a place that I love to hang out in. Because I do not think we should be leaving it to a few 1%, 5% of people who, let's face it, anyone at the top of their game, unless they're fully rewired in a sense and using tools like this, they're protecting their asses. Yeah, they're not going to make bold decisions. they're not going to go out on a limb. And that's when the old school narrative really, really locks in, because there's now too much for them to lose. But ordinary people, like, what have we got to lose, right? We're going to fail. So what? That's learning. And the vision I've got is my kid, you know, being happy, fulfilled, curious, and engaged.
Well, also, I mean, we're at a point in time, the pace of change that's happening with technology and with AI is creating a lot of existential conversations within the education system and with parents as to what's going to be the future like for their children. So unless you're unlocking that or finding that switch in them, you know, they're, what's the future hold for kids? Because you've got to. I think the only way to empower children and young people for a future where so much of work is going to change, and the future and everything around us and the role of these AI agents has to be on, I suppose it's really tapping into the ingenuity and the curiosity and the imagination and creative potential of people and of children. And I think that's what's amazing about what you're doing, is you're finding a route to tap into that for parents and for teachers. So hopefully, hopefully more people will embrace it.
Yeah. And if we just think of it as creative energy, I think as human beings, our biggest gift is we have creative energy. And if we just think of it like as that, and we either switch it on or we switch it off. And when we switch it off, we plummet really fast. Our mental health suffers massively, massively fast. And that's what's at stake here. Like, if we are not exploring our creative energy, I can't see there will be a place for that human being in terms of who have nothing to bring to the table. We don't need the body count now in a team. Yeah, we need the creative thinking, the problem solving, and the ability to use and harness AI to work for us rather than us down the line,
yeah, exactly.
Be a slave to it. Yeah.
Have you recorded the audio version of the book yet?
That's going to be coming in the new year. So yeah, I'm excited to do that. Yes. A little bit daunted about it, but
yes. You're going to be reading it yourself.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And so, yes, I'll definitely be practicing, and maybe a good friend of mine, Gillian, you know, Gillian Burke. I might do some voice screening with me and stuff like that. But yeah, I think I want to read it myself.
That'd be excellent. And when are you appearing on If I Ruled the World?
Yes, hopefully.
Gillian Lunch.
We're going to, I think we're talking on Friday, a little exploration around that, and then, setting something up. But we also have a very exciting project we're discussing as well, which, definitely would definitely want to talk to you about as well, but maybe offer initial conversation.
Excellent. Well, okay, I'll wrap that up now. It's great to hear. I'm going to be sharing the book. It's on my Christmas giving list for quite a few people in the UK. So you'll get a little bump in orders from that. I'll be sharing it on social media as well. So hopefully people can then get some good sort of holiday reading in and have some sort of impact and switch on those, not just the Christmas lights, but the lights of their children.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, that's all for now, folks. Now here's my ask of you. Please follow this podcast on Apple or Spotify or whatever player you use. Also, please subscribe to our new Random Collisions newsletter. We really are working to build a global community of action takers, action engines of people that really care about the problems that need solving. Thank you very much, and see you next time.